Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for John Bell, his friends, his family. And we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends, family, and loyal listeners worldwide. And that means you.
Joyce, Barry, and Friends, the number one radio show. You might be wondering why this is so. Memorable quotes, life lessons, and so much more. The Coach's Corner will make you soar. All outstanding guests that we love to feature. You will find the show to be the best teacher. Great authors like Ted Tsiuba and Bernie Siegel. Awesome leaders that soar like an eagle. Beverly Nadler with Here's to Your Health. Home business opportunities to increase your wealth. Kurt's impersonation and improvisation add to the show's transformation. Broadcasting live across America and around the globe with timely topics and issues to probe. The chat room is always fun. We see your comments and appreciate each one. Want to change your life? Change your approach.
And hire me, Joyce Barry, to be your life coach. I would love to work with you, for you, and with you to get to the next step. Today's show is a very important one, I believe. Today, we're giving you this show because we really hope to make some impact, to make some difference, and to provide some understanding. Why is discrimination still pervasive? What can we do? John Bell, the highly esteemed voice of reason, weighs in on discrimination against black people. Yours truly, Joyce Barry, your host and life coach, weighs in on discrimination against Jews. What can be done about this? As JFK said, if not us, who? If not now, when? Les Brown said, in every day there are 1,440 minutes. That means we have 1,440 daily opportunities to make a positive impact. And Voltaire said, every man is guilty of all the good he did not do. I assert you can make a difference, one person and one positive action at a time. And we bring to you now John Bell, who always makes a difference. Where he shows up, you can be sure you're listening to the voice of reason. Welcome, John Bell. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Joyce. It's a pleasure to be here.
So with a topic like this, why is discrimination still pervasive? What do you think? It's still pervasive.
Well, I think that what you're calling discrimination is pervasive throughout the world, and certainly throughout our society, people tend to have negative attitudes about people who are different from themselves, either in skin color or religion or the way they part their hair. We find thousands of reasons for separating ourselves into opposing groups, and then we discriminate against the group that's not part of the major group. But that's a different question from one of my concerns, which is why are there so many incidents of white people calling the police and police responding aggressively to the presence of black people when the percentage of black people in the world is, I mean, in the United States is only 12 or 13%, but black young men are 21 times more likely to be shot and killed by a policeman than white people. So that's the major concern. That goes a little beyond discrimination, but in answer to your question, discrimination is generally based upon differences between groups of people, and people tend to, I guess, bundle themselves up with their own group and dislike people who are not part of their group.
Absolutely. Let me just cite some of the incidents of recent times. These incidents are coming in so fast and furiously. I'll just name a handful. A retired Michigan firefighter fires a 12-gauge shotgun at a 14-year-old who got lost on his way to school. A manager at a Pennsylvania Starbucks calls the police on two black men whose crime is sitting and waiting for a friend. An L.A. fitness manager in New Jersey calls the police after falsely accusing a gym member of not paying to work out. A white CVS employee in Chicago called the police on a black woman in an incident that's been viewed as racist behavior. This time it was over the use of a coupon. Shopper Camila Hudson said it all started as she tried to use a coupon, but after the store manager questioned its authenticity, he called the cops. Incidentally, the coupon was legitimate. Reggie Fields, a 12-year-old Ohioan who proudly operates Mr. Reggie's lawn cutting service, made national headlines after a white woman called the police on him. She had complained that the child who was cutting her neighbor's lawn cut part of the wrong lawn. A white woman in San Francisco called the police on an 8-year-old black child for selling bottles of water in front of their apartment building. A white student at Yale called police officers on a black student who had nodded off in a common area, and a white woman in Oakland called the police on a black family barbecuing in part of a park that allowed barbecuing. 3 years ago at Yale, a campus police officer pulled a gun on a black student, the son of a prominent New York Times columnist who was casually walking through the campus. John, I hear about these things and my heart breaks. It brings tears to my eyes. What can we do? When will this stop? How can we make it stop?
Well, what we can do and how when will it stop all relates to, first of all, understanding what it is. What's the basis for all of that behavior that you described? That and dozens of more cases that we could cite. And without understanding why it happens and understanding where it comes from, we'll never be able to solve it. The solution really lies in something that, and I don't want to get into the weeds too far in this, but it's called racialism. And that is that it's a debunked theory that you can tell how a person is going to behave by their race, and that certain races have certain characteristics, rather than a notion that certain people evidence certain characteristics. We get into trouble when we ascribe those characteristics to a single racial group. For example, it is generally held among the white community that black people are more violent than white people are, although all of the social evidence and all of the polling and the studies show that when you compare people on an economic level and an educational level, they all commit crime at about the same small rate. Black people, brown people, white people, yellow people, doesn't matter. If they are of an economic and social group, they tend to be the same. So obviously race is not the question. In some instances, economic status may be part of the question, but that has nothing to do with the color of the person that we're talking about. For example, a poor black man is no more dangerous than a poor white man when it comes to stealing or committing a crime. So why do we single out black people to call the police, or why do we single out black people as potential threats in our community? It goes back a long way, Joyce. It goes all the way back to the times of slavery. For those thoughtful people during the times that the United States, this country, was engaged in slavery, they could not justify slavery on any real basis. The imprisonment of another human being, the forcing them to work against their will, depriving them of their basic rights, separating from their wives and children, none of those things could be done if we accepted the fact that these people were human and just like us, in a sense, if you're white. So what they had to do is they had to create this myth that black people were somehow not quite human, and therefore they were equipped by nature to work hard in hot cotton fields. They were equipped by nature to be more violent. They were equipped by nature to be objects of fear and discrimination. And that didn't go away when we did away with slavery, because we had embedded it in. Do you know what the reptilian mind is, the reptilian brain?
No.
Okay, well, let me explain that very briefly.
I have enough trouble understanding my brain.
The reptilian brain is something we all have. It's not white, black, brown, or yellow, or green. It doesn't matter. We all have what is called the reptilian brain. What it really is that part of our brain which evolved first. And it's where the fear and flight reflex resides. There are basic things that we have learned over the thousands of years to be afraid of. And those things remain in our reptilian brain all of our lives. Hopefully what we do, though, is that we learn to discriminate against those things that are truly threats and truly things to be afraid of, like a lion walking down the street. We are likely to immediately feel fear and want to run or protect ourselves in some way. That's that fear that erupts so immediately is coming from the reptilian brain. Unfortunately, what we did hundreds of years ago with slaves, with black Americans, is that we taught people generation after generation that the color of their skin made them something to be feared and afraid of. And that has been implanted in the reptilian brain of many, many people around the world. And so they react spontaneously without thought to the presence of a black skin in their environment. So for some of these people, seeing a little girl, even though she was a little girl, out on the street selling bottles of water, which is something that is as American as apple pie. I mean, when I was a kid, and I'm sure when you were, kids used to make little lemonade stands and stand out on the, you know, in front of their house or on the street corner selling lemonade or cupcakes or cookies or whatever the case may be. Girl Scouts have been going door to door selling cookies forever and ever and ever, and I can't remember ever hearing of a Girl Scout having the police called on her or being shot and killed by a policeman. But if a black kid was doing that, you and I both know that there is a danger lurking in the fact that an unknown black kid in a white neighborhood knocking on doors, even if he's only there selling Boy Scout cookies or something, is going to be seen by some as a threat, something to be afraid of, and that would generate a call to the police department.
It sounds a little to me like the response for Pavlov's dog, when the dog got conditioned to behave in a certain way over and over again, even when there's no reason to behave that well. When the ringing of that bell took place, he automatically went into that response.
That is exactly a great comparison, Joyce, because that's exactly what happens. The dog responds to the stimulus without understanding why. He's been conditioned to respond to that stimulus. And that, hold on
yes.
a second. I've got somebody who was trying to call me for some reason. Okay, it stopped. And that's exactly what's happening in the instances that you described. It is not a conscious decision in the sense that the person looks out the window and says, oh, there's a little girl selling bottled water. What they see is a black person, perhaps in a neighborhood they don't expect to find them, or doing something that seems strange to them. The reptilian brain says, danger, danger, fear, fear, call police, which they do. Unfortunately, many white policemen are afflicted with the same problem. And when they approach the scene and see that the person in question is black, their reptilian brain kicks in. It's not that they're discriminating against black people. They have a built-in, stored-up, inordinate fear of black people. And that fear generates the desire to do something too quickly without thought and without reason. And that's why so many young black men are killed by police when it was unnecessary.
I get that about the automatic response, as in the example I gave. But on any level, I can't equate that to a little child, an innocent little child, different than a teenager that they feel threatened, even though the teenager did nothing. But a little child who thinks like that.
Well, unfortunately, that part of our brain, that's where that fear resides, doesn't distinguish between young black people or middle-aged black people or old black people. The fear is there, and the fear evidences itself based on the color of the person's skin. If they were to stop and think and say, well, wait a minute, that is a black person, but it's a child, something I don't have to fear, something I don't have to be afraid of, or something I don't have to think in my reptilian brain, what are they doing here? They don't belong here. They're not one of us, and therefore they are a danger. That's an immediate kind of response that happens so quickly, people don't realize that that's what they're acting on. And oftentimes you'll find, and I'm sure you've seen this in your research, is that when the police show up and explain to the person what was going on, the person will often say, well, I'm not a racist or anything. I just thought that maybe there was something wrong and I should let the police know. They can't really justify why they're making that call, why they made the decision they made. White policemen will often say, for example, in Chicago, when that 12-year-old boy playing in a park with a water pistol was shot and killed by police, they immediately saw a black male threat. They didn't calculate his age. They didn't look to see what kind of a real weapon he was carrying. That instant fear kicked in, and they shot and killed him. And that's what we're dealing with. If we're going to talk about this morning how we deal with doing something about this problem, we have to think in terms of not that these people are making a mistake, not that they're doing something they think is wrong. They are responding to a fear experience that is deeply embedded in their thinking. They were raised with it. It's part of their activity. And just as I wouldn't have to think twice if I saw a lion out on the street in front of my house, I would immediately feel fear and immediately call for help. That's exactly what many white people do.
John, having mentioned the reptilian brain, I looked it up as you were speaking because I hadn't heard that before. But what goes with that territory is it controls the body's vital functions such as heart rate, breathing,
exactly,
body temperature, and balance. So
exactly,
all these things are kicking out and they're freaking out on automatic with those
exactly
responses just because they see black. Is that kind of like that sees the red flag waving in the arena?
That's exactly it, George. Now you're hitting on the right part of the subject. It's not that this person sits down and thinks logically about the kid out there with the lawnmower mowing the lawn. It's that they see black and that reptilian fear kicks in, and they respond without realizing what they're doing, without thinking about what they're doing. And that's why when they're questioned afterwards, police officers will say, well, it looked like a grown man to me. Well, most 12-year-old boys do not look like grown men. Or she looked like she didn't belong here, and there was something wrong with the way she was behaving. Well, they didn't stop to think about all of that or to question any of that. If a white kid had been out there mowing the lawn, they might have come to the door and said, excuse me, do you have permission to do that? And the kid would say, yes, they're paying me to do it. Well, maybe you would do mine when you're finished. That's the kind
right
of thoughtful interaction that would take place if there were no fear involved. But if you see something you're afraid of, then what the people who are responding are doing is responding to the fear, not to the reality of the situation.
That reptilian
brain. I'm glad you looked
brain,
it up
that's,
because that's exactly what the problem is.
Yeah.
And more people should look up reptilian brain.
It put it in perspective. I had never heard of it, but once I saw that definition, it's an automatic response.
Yes.
Taking it a bit further, if you're white in America, the familiar thing is the idea that black equals danger. And
exactly.
Too often, you don't question that assumption. You barely know you've made it. Just as he didn't recognize, much less question, his implicit assumptions that black people should be feared. It never occurs to these people that black people who work, pay taxes, go to school, raise their kids, and get dinner on just like normal people deserve to expect, just like normal people, that they be left the heck alone while bothering no one and minding their own business.
Exactly.
Sadly, people of color have been racially profiled, confronted by police, and in some cases arrested after white people, owners, employees, or bystanders viewed them with suspicion. Many of the incidents have spread on social media, calling national attention to the issue. And I'm glad for the social media, because we would never know some of these things that have been going on that have been so horrendous. We wouldn't know about it. We wouldn't know what side to take.
Exactly, because these things have been going on for generations, ever since, in this country at least, ever since slavery. And the fact is that we look at it and try to explain it with rational explanations. Why would a policeman shoot a 12-year-old kid playing with a water pistol? Well, because his fear kicked in. He didn't see a 12-year-old kid with a water pistol. He saw a black individual with what could have been a gun, and his fear, his reptilian brain, immediately caused a fear which made him shoot to kill without stopping to think, without questioning the kid, without finding out what was actually going on, or without even saying, put down that gun before he fired.
Yeah, John, I really understand it on a whole new way. It upset me, it bothered me, all these incidents, and I'm just saying, why would anybody do that? But that reptilian brain, with all those bodily reactions, there's no rationale. They're just on automatic, F-E-A-R, fear, 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 just because the person is black.
Absolutely, and that's what we need to get people to understand. And solving the problem, then, is not a question of sitting down and saying, you're crazy, you're wrong, why did you do that? We should arrest that guy, we should throw that policeman off the force, all of those kinds of things. That's not addressing the problem of what's been embedded in our reptilian brains over hundreds of years. If we want to address the real problem, we have to think in terms of re-educating the reptilian brain. We have to really do not one day off like Starbucks did to talk about race. That's not going to accomplish it. We need to begin in our schools. We need to begin with our young people, excising that part of the reptilian brain which causes fear at the sight of someone who is not white. And that's going to take some time. It's going to take some really serious effort. And it's going to take a real need for cooperation by all the races if we're going to ever really get rid of it.
And the real place to start is in the schools when children
yes.
are very young. At that time, they're being conditioned by where their parents are coming from, what they see, what they heard,
exactly.
what they know, rather than the truth of civil rights and discrimination and all of that. One thing I think you folks should do to make a difference in your life is listen to our show every day, because we want to impart the truth, make that positive impact, and hear in the wise words of our health guru, Beverly Nadler, is why you should be listening.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day. A way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, you can partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to JoyceBarryAndFriends.com, and right on our home page on the upper left, you will see my picture, and right under that it says follow. And simply by clicking on that, you can join the thousands of loyal listeners who became followers, so you need not miss any of our shows when you cannot join us at the live time of 11 a.m. Eastern. All shows are archived, 8 years of our shows, all archived, everyone there. And in the search bar of the upper right of the homepage, if you type in John Bell, all his shows will come up with the dates where you can see, rather hear any of John's shows. If you put in a topic, that topic will come up. So on the homepage, Joyce Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and friends.com, you can track down the people you want to hear again and again, or share the links with your friends. You can download the shows. It is there for your listening pleasure. So, John, do you think things will ever change?
Well, change is constant and continuous, so I think things will change. What we need to do, though, is if we want to see change come more quickly, is to address the real core problem, not the peripheral kinds of things. When we address those kind of, I don't know, problems that are really just on the fringe of the real problem, we don't solve anything. If we don't get to the point where we undo what was done during slavery, primarily in this country, and it's done around the world in many instances. If we don't undo some of these racial stereotypes that we have them about Jews, we have them about the Irish. When I hear people say, oh, well, you know, the Irish are all alcoholics, that's one of those snap judgment decisions that people have been taught over the years and they respond to. Now, that one's not as serious because it's not part of the fear response. It's part of the response that may cause Irishmen occasionally to suffer some kind of discrimination. But where fear is concerned, I mean, we're right to teach our children to be afraid of lions, you know, and historically we were right to teach them that. But when we taught them to be afraid of the color black or brown, then we implanted something that has no reason, no rationality to it. We're saying that all black faces or all brown faces are threatening and dangerous, and you need to be afraid when you see them. That's what gets embedded in the reptilian mind.
Yes, as I said, that really put things in perspective. I want to say that I've been doing this show, my own show, 8 years. Prior to that, 2 years with 3 alpha males, show with them. So I've been on radio for a while. Again, always with the intent of making a difference. But what it does call for is action, to know you can take part in something. I just want to quote this from Martin Niemöller that also puts things in perspective. When you don't act, when you don't get involved. First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists. I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. I have always been a strong supporter of civil rights for as far back as I can remember. My two favorite causes is that and Israel and against anti-Semitism. So it just, as I said, it starts with education to the very young. I just want to give this quote from Nelson Mandela about Israel. This is how I feel about Israel. Again and again, we have to fight anti-Semitism. Again and again, we have to fight hard for its survival. Again and again, we have to fight against all odds, surrounded on all sides by its enemies. Again and again, they are dragged into wars they do not want, while the world blames them for those wars. It is a never-ending battle just for the right to exist. So that's why I kind of equate the two causes, even though it's somewhat different. Blacks have to fight for the right to be black and be left alone.
And a Jew can walk down, a Jewish man can walk down the street and nobody knows that he's a Jew. But a black man can't walk down the street and not be identified as black. That's the big difference, Joyce, that if I don't profess my religious belief, for example, nowadays, if a Muslim were to identify himself, if he were to wear some kind of symbol that immediately identifies, well, here's a better example. There is a religion called Sikh, the Sikh religion. Some people pronounce it Sikh. It's really Sikh. They wear turbans. And you may have seen them in your lifetime, a lot of them in New York. They have a fairly large population here in the United States. They are not Muslims. They believe in a religion called Sikhism. They are often attacked and beaten and discriminated against because they are identified as Muslims. People see somebody with a beard and a turban on their head and assume, well, they must be Muslims, although most Muslims don't wear turbans. Sikhs wear turbans. But just that misunderstanding can cause a problem. And that's why I say that there are different forms of discrimination, but people react to them in different ways. We rarely hear of a Jewish man or woman being shot on the street because they were ringing somebody's doorbell looking for directions.
Right,
that's
I agree
not likely
with that.
To happen.
But religious Jews do wear yarmulkes, so they're identified that way. But a lot of the incidents, and they're very prevalent now, is where they're desecrating synagogues, they're desecrating tombstones at cemeteries, where their houses, they paint swastikas on them. So, yes, the violence takes different forms, but they're all horrific, no matter what form it takes.
Well, close. But at any rate, they are all evidence of preconceived notions about these people. What it depends on primarily, though, is how, first of all, how deeply embedded the preconceived notion is and whether it evokes fear. Discrimination against Jews is generally not related to fear. It's related to unsubstantiated claims that Jews run the world or Jews are in charge of all the money. You hear people saying all Jews are rich, all those kinds of stupid things that people say about Jews. But a man walking down the street wearing a yarmulke is not something that automatically invokes fear. Most people will
That's
say,
correct.
Oh, he must be going to temple or he's a Jew, but they're not afraid of him. They may not like him. They may discriminate against him in their own way, but he doesn't evoke fear. And that's what's getting black people and brown people killed. It's the fear element in that racialism, in the part of the brain, the reptilian brain that activates fear. So, and I don't mean that discrimination against Jews isn't critical and important. It is. But you have to approach it in a different way because, as I said, I could walk down the street wearing a yarmulke all day long and nobody's going to bother me. But if a black man were to walk down a street in a neighborhood that's primarily white, he could be attacked or have the police called or be shot just because of the color of his skin.
Yes. And you gave some examples. You're in your car, you stop for a red light, a black man approaches, you immediately put the buttons down. Would you do that if
locked
it was
door.
A white person approaching? That was a good example. If a black man came over just because he wanted to know the time, would your body tense up? Different than if it was a white person. So you do raise some good points, certainly substantiated, because it happens every single day.
It's exactly the case. It's going on all the time. Black men will can tell you about the door lock sound. And they're walking down the street. If there's a white family or a white person sitting in their car and a black man is approaching, he doesn't even have to approach the car. Just be walking by, you'll hear the door locks click because the person is protecting themselves against something they are afraid of. They don't know this guy. He could be a college professor with two really nice kids and a beautiful wife. Barack Obama talked about experiencing it when he was going to Harvard. So it doesn't matter who you are. If you have that non-white skin, you evoke fear in the reptilian brain of too many people.
John, what can we do? We have to do something, anything. I do believe that every step, every call for positive action can make a difference, one person at a time. I said it starts in the public schools with the conditioning, just like in the schools with the Arabs and the Palestinians. They don't even have Israel on the map because they don't want it to exist. It's not even on the map. And where they're paid, literally paid, the terrorists that killed Jews are martyrs. There are pictures everywhere and the families are paid. So it takes different forms in different places. In France, it's really getting out of hand now.
But see, Joyce, one of the problems is that what you're talking about now is all true, but it generalizes. No one can attack all of those kinds of racial discrimination at one time. You can't solve the problem of the non-Jew versus the Jew, the white versus the black, the Muslim versus the Christian. If you lump all those things together, they become insurmountable problems. You have to address these issues one at a time. I would love to talk to you sometime about the specific problems that are evoked by the way we teach people about Jews. That's a separate issue. The issue that you asked me to discuss this morning is really about why black kids are having the police called on them for selling water on the street corner. It's not their religion that people are responding to. It is their skin color. And you address that in a different way than you address the prejudice and discrimination people feel in relation to Jews. That's another subject, and it needs to be addressed. But if we lump them all together, they become overwhelming. And people say, come to the conclusion, well, everybody hates everybody, so there's nothing I can do about that.
Your point is well taken, John. That's why you're called the voice of reason. It is well taken. I guess I lump it together because it's very upsetting to me wherever the discrimination comes. As a human being, it's very, very upsetting to me.
Exactly, and it should be. And why has it prevailed? Why has it persisted for so many years, for hundreds of years? It's persisted because we attack it in the wrong way. We don't realize that we are teaching generation. You mentioned those Palestinian kids, the kids that are anti-Israel and anti-Jew. They are being taught from the time they are babies to hate Jews. So you're not going to change it simply by saying, you should stop that. That's not the right thing to do. No. In their heart of hearts, in their reptilian brains, Jews are evil and bad and killers and destroyers and have taken over their lands and have killed their grandparents. They have a deep-seated fear and anger toward Jews, which is not going to be erased simply by killing them or blowing them up. That just makes it worse.
No, but I had said that's where it started and they're conditioned that way. So my only response, if we could go back to ground zero and start in the very young and teach people and see people as, that we're all the same and harp on the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated. That's what we need to go back to. Treat others as you want to be treated.
Exactly. We need to get away from the kind of education and training that begins at birth. There's a song, a very popular song, that says, you have to be taught to hate and fear. You have to be carefully taught. That's the truth.
Yes.
Babies are not born with this fear. It's embedded in them in their from the moment that they begin to breathe. People don't realize that children are especially in the first 3 years of life, are absorbing every piece of information that comes into their area. They will hear an argument between their parents. They will hear a discussion among adults in the room when they are too young to understand it. But those thoughts are being embedded in their brain. And we don't realize
that. I believe
that
song comes from The King and I, by the way. It's a fabulous song.
Yes, it is. It's from The King and I. Exactly. And what we need to begin realizing is that we are raising generation after generation of people who are being taught to hate other people. And that's where it has to begin. We have to go back even beyond the school. The school is a good place to do a lot of the work, but you still have to undo what has been implanted by the parents. So we need a lot of work to get rid of some of these things.
That's why a frequent guest on my show is Rabbi Potashnik and Father Brian McQueenie. They're called Brothers in Faith, and they're interfaith. And they go to the same lectures and counsel people, not based on faith, but based on really loving and respecting each other. The rabbi, I have them on my show all the time, the rabbi goes to Christmas Mass on Christmas Eve every year, and the priest, who's with the Archdiocese, he goes to Passover services. And I love that. That's what I want to see more of, to understand and respect the differences rather than dislike people for those differences.
Exactly. But as we're discovering here this morning, and I'm sure others have discovered before us, is that the preparation for that kind of world begins at birth. That's when we are burying in the minds and brains of our children hatred and fear for other people. And that is very difficult to root out as an adult. It has been there for 15, 20, 30 years. And some of it, if you read that definition of reptilian brain again, you will see that person's not thinking. That person is simply responding to a great deal of physical and emotional responses generated by the presence of the fear object. That's all it takes.
And they are on total automatic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's very difficult to accept and difficult to understand. But until we do, we're going to constantly have these questions. Why would anybody do that? Why would a policeman just shoot an innocent black kid? Why would they call the police because a black woman was knocking on somebody's door? Or like the kid in Detroit who missed his school bus and was walking to school and didn't quite know how to get there. Went up to the door of a house to ask where the school was located, and a woman saw him standing at the door and started screaming, "Why are you trying to break into my house? Why are you trying to break?" And her husband came running downstairs with a gun. Fortunately, the kid thought to run, but the guy with the gun shot at him, and fortunately he missed, and the kid got behind some obstruction or something and hid. But her reaction
was, "Thank God he got
away."
The problem is all those who don't get away. That's
exactly
the problem.
And why she was so immediately afraid to see a 14-year-old boy standing at her door asking for directions. That's what we need to address.
I go back to the question, what can you do? What part can you play? And the $64,000 question, which I put to Verse, is if not now, when? Joyce, Barry, and Friends, the number one worldwide internet radio show. This poem, an original by yours truly, is entitled, If Not Now, When? We are giving you the education. We are giving you the information. We are giving you the motivation. We are giving you the inspiration. What you really need to do is to put this into application. Do you want a transformation? You must use your imagination. It might take some perspiration. It's all in the preparation. You must really be sure there is no procrastination. It helps to have a fascination and very strong determination. You want a positive demonstration, achieve success in the administration. It really is the time. Give each show your consideration. What is your aspiration? What do you need for stimulation to get healthy and off that medication to get wealthy? It's your destination. So make today the day for your participation. If you do, congratulations. If not, now, when? You know, we see so much of what's going on in the news, negative, negative, negative. We need more educational shows, a show like this where we're trying to educate people, that maybe someone can just stop and say, oh, I never thought of it quite like that. Maybe I should give my black neighbor a chance to be my friend. There isn't enough of that anywhere. It's not in the schools. It's not in the media. Just bringing it to attention with social media, that's the first step. That's good, so we know what's going on.
Well, exactly. You know, we live in some areas of our lives, we live in almost complete ignorance as to the reasons that we behave in certain ways. I often hear people talking about discrimination. For example, no one seems to understand that when our present president of the United States came down his escalator and said that Mexicans are rapists and murderers, and they're flooding the country, and M13 is a gang that's here to destroy people. He implants those feelings in the minds of people so deeply that they begin to see all Mexicans as threats. Although so many, thousands of Americans have vacationed in Mexico over the last 100 years, hundreds of thousands, and found the Mexican people warm and wonderful and welcoming and all of the rest. And yet we have this person who is supposed to be the leader of the nation, charging Mexicans with all kinds of unnatural and unrealistic behavior. It's just crazy. M13, the group the gang group that they talk about coming to America to kill Americans, wasn't born in Mexico. It was born in L.A. And police would arrest those M13 members and deport them to Mexico, where they recruited other members and try to get back to the United States. But nobody talks about that. You know, the president makes it sound as if they are all coming from Mexico or Guatemala or El Salvador or something, and they're this horrible gang of people. Well, it's not exactly that's not exactly the story.
Well, it's so much more than that. He's making it a much worse world for gays, for lesbians, for so many people. He condemns everything from my friend Oprah Winfrey to the show. How everything, he comes from such hatred. The hats that they wear supporting him, Make America Great Again, really it was a typo error, because his slogan is Make America Hate Again. And I feel that the world has taken such a worse turn with this president. Every time I put on the news, I know it's going to be the next horrific thing that he stands for, Make America Hate Again. You want to know how to make America get great again? Repeal and replace Trump. But anyway, that's a whole other thing. I could go on and on with that one. It's just so frightening when I see the whole thing at the border, what's going on with these people, with their babies torn from their arms. It just brings tears to my eyes, all that is going on in this country, people being in fear of the knock on the door that they'll be deported. So that's a whole other thing of discrimination.
Yep, another topic.
Another topic, another day, but it always starts at the top. What are the leaders passing down to the blind, deaf, dumb followers who just follow with any thought to what is so? What is the truth? What do I really stand for?
Exactly, and that's why we have to get back to that individual level to clarify those issues in their minds, to help them understand what is the truth. And it begins, one of the ways we can begin is to get to know each other. you know, for black people and white people to take the time to get to know each other, for Latin Americans to sit down with people of other racial groups and talk to each other, discover the commonality of our humanity, talk about how we all want the same things, all fear the same things, and all are desirous of accomplishing the same things. I think when we discover our commonality, and I mean at a deeper level, not just the fact that, well, yeah, he wants a job, he wants to live in a middle-class neighborhood, that's not it. The American dream is a deeply seated feeling that people can come here and become, have better lives. They can become what they want to be. They can reach their ultimate example of humanity. They can do the kinds of things that they've always wanted to do for themselves and for their children. That's a common human experience. It's not something that's held only by one racial group. All of us feel the same desires and the same needs. And we need to express that to each other, get to know each other more than just by our first and last names. Get to know us as people. We can get rid of then of this groupthink that is so influenced by the reptilian brain.
Stephen Covey said it right, really well. Seek first to understand, then to be understood.
Yeah.
Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. Reaction is ego, so don't do it. Responding mindfully is the only way to communicate. All of us think that we see the world as it is. In fact, we see the world as we are. And to achieve goals you've never achieved before, you need to start doing things you've never done before. So, folks, this show is a wake-up call. Get out of the box and seek first to understand.
Good idea. Good idea. And it begins with that notion that we need to understand. It's not an area that's easy to explore. Most people, most of us, don't want to face the fact that we may have these deep-seated biases that cause us to react in certain ways to certain people. But until we're willing to admit that we probably all have some element of that, of those biases in us, and face them, deal with them, reject them, or we're going to have this problem continue.
Martin Luther King Jr., who had an incredible way with words, another one of my heroes, the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And I love what Edmund Burke shared also. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing, because he could do only a little. So that, too, is the point of the show today, to think of what you could do, except in the old days, everything was he. In my modern version, I say for good men and women to do nothing. No one made a greater mistake than he or she who did nothing, because he or she could do only a little. So if this show opens up your eyes and you can find some way, big or small, everything is like the butterfly effect. And we talked about the butterfly effect on prior shows, where a butterfly flapping his wings in one place of the world can create a hurricane, another place of world, cause and effect. Every action has a reaction. If you start somewhere and it could lead to critical mass, my God, we've got something done.
Well, every one of the quotations that you just did have been around for a long time. So we need to go beyond being able to quote the quotes and live the lives. I know so many people who quote the exact same quotations you just quoted. The arc of the universe bends long, but it bends toward justice. All of those kinds of things. They're great sayings. They're great little quotations. But until we practice them and put them into practice in our lives, they're just that. They're just words on a page or sayings out of our mouths. But I wonder how many people who could recite those things actually apply them in the way they live their daily lives. Because if they did, Joyce, you and I wouldn't be talking about this problem today.
Well, I've led seminars. I've been a public speaker for decades, and I always found that when people walk away with something that really remind them of the whole thing, it's that powerful quote, I agree with you. It has to go into action. Action changes things. ACT, I totally agree. But that's what they often walk away with. Just like in a show, you're walking out of the theater humming your favorite song. That's what you walk away with. And hopefully that'll trigger the action that will impact the slogan, the quote.
Yeah, except that do you remember when Niemöller said what you quoted earlier, or what Bonhoeffer said back when? Those were all things that were said during the Second World War.
Yes, I have the dates.
And,
I have.
Yes.
But John, there's no way of knowing how many people it did impact where they made a difference. You're looking at the people we don't know where you know it didn't impact them.
Because that's what we're talking about today. How do we solve the problem? The people that it impacted are not the problem. It's the people who have not been impacted by those things that are the problem. And so what we need to do, though, is to find out how we get people to internalize those things. I know racists who can quote Martin Luther King. That's not a proof of anything. The quotations should generate thought and change. If they're just quotations, a parrot can quote Martin Luther King. But a parrot
I agree,
think
John, but that's the intent. When I give quotes, that is the intent. I know for me, when it's something coming up that I have to deal with that I don't feel like, don't want to, I go to the quotes and say it again and again and again to change my brain thinking to handle things, get things done. So I use them in my everyday life, and I encourage others to do likewise. I get what you're saying, but I still assert there are many people that some quotes do impact their lives.
Yeah, I think they do in some ways, but I think that what I would ask them to do is to live it, not just to recite it. If you live it, it's like in my Bible study classes, I tell people reading the Bible is of very, very little real value. Studying the Bible and then acting in your life according to the preachments, the teaching of the Bible, is what's important. Just reading it every day, it's something to do, but it doesn't change much behavior. They need to study
put it in three words, what John is saying, in three words, walk the talk.
Exactly.
I know. I'm just such a big fan of quotes. I have books and books and books.
I know.
And John, I love quotes, so that's my thing. So don't attack my thing, because I say I use them a lot to get people to wake up.
Yeah, I think quotes are fantastic as jump-off points. You know, when you say, you know, when you repeat the one that you did about when they came for the Jews, I wasn't Jewish, so I didn't do anything. Okay, it's great to know that, but to internalize it and understand what it really means is where the change will come about. So
absolutely.
I appreciate it. I know you can use those things as points of interest, as stimulation to get people to think. But I find the hardest thing in the world to do nowadays is to get people to go beyond reading a headline or listening to a soundbite or responding to a quote and saying, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, if it makes sense, interject it in the way you live your life and let
absolutely.
It influence your behavior. That's
I second that.
I look for. Good.
John Bell.
Excellent.
What message do you want to leave our audience today?
Just that we all need to begin to do a little introspection. We need to begin looking internally at ourselves and ferreting out those things that we know are parts of our reptilian brain. We need to focus on what is it that makes me angry? What is it that makes me make choices and decisions about other people? What are the things that I believe that are probably not true? I think it begins there on an individual level. If we begin to examine ourselves, to thine own self be true, examine who you are, what you're about, what your fears are, what your concerns are, what makes you angry, what makes you respond out of fear, and then examine those things and try to put some real rational thought apply some real rational thought to them. Then you can begin to change yourself, and the changing of the world begins with changing yourself. Nothing has ever been changed in this world by people who have not changed first. So we need to change ourselves individually if we want the world to become changed.
Absolutely. It all, the ball is in your court.
Absolutely.
Why not get it in the basket? Folks, I want to thank you for tuning in today. And I see some new people in the chat room. Love for you to write how you found out about this show. Love to hear from you. And I want to close with my special prayer for all of you. Thank you, Jod Bell. God bless you. We love you.
Thank
Always
you,
welcome on our show.
Bye-bye.
Always welcome. Okay, so let me share this with you. Today, my special prayer. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating magical memories, and manifesting marvelous miracles. Folks, go out and make someone happy today. We always want to make you happy. Do a random act of kindness. Pay it forward. So in that regard, we invite you to join in the fun, laugh along with us, sing along with us, dance along with us, and you could do that right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. Thank you, and God bless you.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again. As Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.